I'm pleased to welcome to Industry Chatter on In Depth with Francis Rose, Ted Davies, who is the CEO now of Altamira Technologies. Ted, it's great to see you. Thank you very much for coming in and being with me today.
It's always good to see you, Francis.
You have made a shift since the last time you were here. You were with Unisys for a long time, and I've spoke to you a number of times as a leader there. You're now 5 months into your tenure at Altamira. Tell me about that company and what it does for clients in the federal government, Ted.
Sure. You know, Altamira, well, first of all, let me say that I had a wonderful time at Unisys, and Francis, I've always enjoyed talking to you about my experiences there. This was a major shift for me in that Unisys is a publicly traded company and Altamira is privately held. But the big focus for us is in the national intelligence community, and the work that we do mostly on customer site is around big data analytics, open source software development, multi-intelligence analysis, cybersecurity, and some of the core mission-critical areas for the intelligence community.
Now, it's my understanding that the intelligence community has always kind of been at the forefront of wherever the federal government is in the data movement in government. Whatever period of time we're talking about, they're doing it the most. Is that a fair read on my part?
I would say they're definitely a step ahead than the rest of the government.
So what's the implication for a company that's primary book of business is in that community as far as what you have to do to serve that community?
Well, it's an interesting time for that community. I think for those that have been involved and watched it over the years know that the last few years have been extremely challenging in terms of the evolution of the threat to our country. And the things that they have to deal with on a real-time basis is just changing almost by the minute. So that's a continuation of a trend. They've also gotten used to, I think, a constrained budget environment. And even though IT is a major portion of their budget, it has been highly constrained over the past few years, particularly with sequestration. But I think what's new since the Snowden incident is really this public scrutiny in the debate. And I think that's a real added pressure point for that community. And it makes it a tough place to operate for everybody. But I think they've held up very, very well.
Well, another item that's happening at the same time as this added public scrutiny is a little bit of a shift in the definition of what data is. I mean, for a long time, most of the data that people talked about to me in government was information like you'd see on a spreadsheet. Yep. And especially in the intel community, that's light years. The discussion about data now is light years beyond that, right, Ted?
Sure. And it's not just the intel community, but you know, all the discussion around big data, you have structured data, the data that you're used to hearing and seeing, and also the unstructured data that comes in from all these different sources and all these different formats, everything from voice to video to social media. And so not only the intelligence community, but the entire government's dealing with how do you make sense of all that data. And there's tools and algorithms that are able to do that. One of the things that we have at Altamira, we've built an open source-based tool called Lumify, which makes sense of all that kind of data. It basically pulls it together in a format that can be understood, analyzed, and then visualized. So there's different tools that are built to take advantage of these different data streams and make sense out of them. But it's a complex world for sure.
Tell me about the difference in working for a company and with a team in an equity environment rather than in a shareholder, stockholder environment.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm the CEO now of this company. When I was at Unisys, I was the president of a division. And it was pointed out to me as I was taking on this job that you always have a boss. And, my boss was CEO of Unisys and certainly the board of directors there. My boss today is my board of directors, which is made up of lead advisors from these investment companies. And, one of the interesting things as we've gotten through this year, this past year, 2014, we put some operational improvements in place, got the company organized for this year. We also put together a 3-year strategic plan. And we've done strategic planning before, and I've done them in publicly traded companies. But this was a little different. I think we really had the opportunity to say, 3 years out, where do we want to be? What does this have to look like? What does success look like? And many different facets of that. And then we could then back it up and say, okay, if that's what success is 3 years from now, what's it look like in 2016? What's it look like in 2015? And we actually cut each one of those years in half and said that if we get to the middle of 2015 and we're on track for our 3-year plan, what has to be taking place? Mm-hmm. What are the wins that we've had? What are the customer success we've had? Where are we with our people? And where do the financials look? But it's not necessarily a quarterly view on this quarter's financials. We're not getting viewed by the public, on how we operate there. It's more of a, this is where we want to be in 3 years. And I picked 3 years because you have to go beyond 1 year, but I think if you go beyond three, it's really hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
But then how do you make sure you're on track? And so that's the way our board is measuring us now. They're saying, you know, when you look at, as we close 2014, are we set for next year? And as we get to the middle of next year, are we on track to the 3 years? And at the end of next year, it'll be the same thing. And we know that it won't be perfect. It's not a straight line. There'll be things that work well and things that don't work well. You have to adjust, but at least you've got sort of that longer term view. And I think that's really been a fun and healthy trade-off I've been able to make.
When you look at that timeline, there's a lot more breathing room there than for 3 years than it is for 3 months.
It really is. You know, you find in publicly traded companies, you do spend quite a bit of time, you know, focusing on how you're going to close the quarter and start out the next quarter well. And that's just the function of where the marketplace is today.
What does that mean as far as how you manage the company then? What does that mean as far as how you think about hiring and retention and how you think about growth and how you think about those kinds of things?
Well, it allows you to invest differently. You know, I would say that you know, publicly traded companies certainly have growth objectives. We have growth objectives. Actually, we have pretty high growth objectives and expectations we put on ourselves. But it allows us to be conscious of the bottom line, but not always focused on every penny of the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we're investing money wisely, that's going to drive that longer-term return, then that's okay. And we're willing to trade a little bit on the bottom line in the near term to be able to get that top line over the long term. And so we'll invest. We'll bring in people that we need to have, some key people. We're investing in some R&D that's allowing us to generate some new solutions we can take to market. And we're also creatively looking at partnerships with young companies from in the area and outside the area, and again, with a much longer-term view.
R&D is an interesting one. We hear a lot about the Defense Department looking to try to shift R&D costs out of the Pentagon and onto the companies in the defense industrial base. What's the R&D landscape look like in the Intel community right now?
Well, it's definitely been shifted back to us. But it's interesting. With the mission and the threat so rapidly evolving, there's an opportunity to bring new solutions to market. And I think a willingness to really look at new solutions that because of the mission demands it. So I would say there's a real openness to bringing new things forward. But you have to invest yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You got to invest wisely.
Yeah.
And just to finish that thought, what we typically do on the R&D is we don't sit around the room and you know kind of throw darts at the wall and figure out what might work. It's really based on a real customer need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really pulling folks together and saying, what are some of the customer challenges that they're having today? What's working today? What's not working today? What have we delivered, you know, one time that if we just add more to it, we could actually leverage it in other areas? So it's really mission-focused R&D, and I think that's what most companies look at doing.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next because it seems like a lot of the discussion around innovation and a lot of the discussion around R&D is had in this town kind of with in a vacuum. Let's mm-hmm. start completely from scratch and contemplate our navels about what the next big thing is going to be or the next shiny object. And maybe not as much time is spent around the way you just described it about, well, what does the customer, the agency or whatever that I'm trying to serve, what do they really need or what are they going to need 6 months or a year or 3 years from now?
Absolutely. It's really, and most people look at it as the voice of the customer
mm-hmm.
and thinking about through those conversations, and typically those conversations are had with folks on the ground. The vast majority of our people work on customer sites, so we're trying to pull them back into the organization and go out and see them and hear what are your customers telling you their biggest challenges are
mm-hmm.
and what ideas do we have to solve those.
So if I think about it from that respect, then this broader question of innovation becomes a lot easier to crack, I think, if that's where the focus of the conversation is an ongoing dialogue with the customer and not just guessing.
It is. It's ongoing dialogue. The interesting complexity and or multiplier is that you also find creative ways to do partnerships and find other companies that might solve a challenge a little differently or their approach, when added to your approach, actually solves a different problem in a better and a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're constantly looking and not only what the customer says, but what's going on in the market locally and outside the area as well. That's the other thing that's interesting having equity backers is that they've got other companies they've invested in and kind of a broader landscape of companies they're looking at. And so they're typically, I'm spending a good amount of time meeting with other companies and listening to their solutions and trying to figure out, boy, if we just take what they did, adapt it a little bit, maybe we can solve some of these other customer challenges. So you do need to be agile and creative, and that's a when you can do that, you can be successful.
I want to ask you about those partnerships, but let's carve it into two different areas. Are those partnerships easier or harder to make given the budget environment that we're in right now? First, for companies that are traditional government contractors, and then secondly, for these kinds of companies that you're talking about, either that your board is involved with or other people are involved with, but that may not be traditional government contractors, may have some solution that will be applicable, but they're not right now in what's considered the government contracting community.
Yeah, I don't think it's any harder to do than it was before. I don't think it's any harder in this part of the marketplace. It really does take the right mind sitting in a room and spending enough time together. You know, you can have very high level discussions, and you start out, you know, does this seem to feel like it might work? But at the end of the day, you got to have the right folks in the room and really collaborating and putting things on a board and really understanding in a little bit of depth what one solution brings versus the solutions you might have today. But it can be done. It just takes some time and energy. And that's really where some of the R&D, you know, comes in, is being able to actually give people some time and energy to go off and do that.
One of the reasons that I wondered about that is because I know folks, given the environment that we're in, some companies at least are a little queasier about giving away any potential. It's IP and you know, that kind of thing that makes people a little shaky sometimes.
Well, we have NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, that we would always sign to make sure that that there's nothing being disclosed. At the same time, you still worry.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be selective. You know, what we're also trying to build is strategic partnerships, not just, you know, piece together one-off solutions, but try and find somebody that we find people that we can work with, where we work with them over and over and over again and build that trusting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You also, you know, you're not going to pick a direct competitor. So I've had some conversations where it looks like, well, it's really interesting stuff, but you know what? You're sitting right on top of what we're sitting on, and we both just figure it out and agree we're not going to probably collaborate.
Your short conversation, though.
Yeah, short conversations, right.
Ted Davies is CEO of Altamira, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We'll continue in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Be right back. Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. My guest on Industry Chatter today is the CEO of Altamira Technologies, Ted Davies. And Ted, in addition to running that company, you are also the incoming president of the Industry Advisory Council. You'll be succeeding my friend Dan Chenick, who leads IAC now, and his colleague Rick Holgate, who I think has been the chair of ACT for, what, like 16 years in a row now?
At least a couple.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yep.
So why is it you've always been involved in these groups, and you've always talked to me about the importance of nurturing the contracting community as a whole and not just your company. Why is that important to you?
I do like to be involved, and I think it's some altruistic, because I think it's the right thing to do off the industry, and some of it is it's the good business decision as well. You know, when you get involved in different organizations, especially ACT-IAC, which is a highly collaborative organization with lots of government folks involved, you meet new people and you make new relationships. And quite frankly, you get to see what's going on outside of the area you're in today. So it gives you a much broader landscape. And for folks that have been involved in conferences like I've been, or different workshops or different forums, special interest groups, things like that, you really get a different perspective from that. So from a selfish perspective, you gain from that. You know, from an altruistic perspective, the industry is such a powerful industry with so much capability. The government has so many great people that are involved in it that, quite frankly, don't get the credit they deserve. And, you know, one of the things that I'm very excited about is the opportunity and the time I'm working with Dan and Rick now and as we take over next year the IAC leadership, is really allowing the success stories of government to come forward and really find the things that are going well and highlighting those and really recognizing excellence. And I think ACT-IAC has a very key role in that. The other thing is that to solve some of the big challenges that government has today, it's not just the CIO working by themselves. It's really got to be a much broader community. And so we've been pushing this year, and we're going to push next year to bring the acquisition community in, to bring the mission community in, to bring the financial community in, So to bring, you know, the human capital people in. And, you know, you can't solve big government challenges as an IT leader by yourself. And so, you know, broadening that the net, so to speak, to bring other folks in is going to be, and it continues today to be, very important. And I just think it really helps the government move forward in a good direction.
I was struck by the response to this. I moderated a panel at ELC this year, yep. And the panel included an HR leader, yep. And included David Robinson, the management leader from FEMA.
Yep.
And I was struck by the response, not just to them, but folks that came to me and said, boy, I was really glad to hear those perspectives. Mm-hmm. Wasn't expecting that necessarily from an IT conference.
Yep.
I think in 2014, 2015, and beyond, those folks have to be involved in the conversations.
They have to be. And we're really trying to make it of interest to them. And we want not only them on the panels, we want them in the audience as well, mm-hmm. being part of the discussion, because we're trying to get the whole community talking. And, you know, the ACT-DIAC mission is, simply put, is advancing government. And if we can get more folks in the room talking, it really helps. You know, we have a lot of high-profile acquisition failures in government, but there's so many good stories of successes, and it always happens, almost invariably, when you've got good acquisition leadership, good technology leadership, financial leadership, mission leadership, executives on both industry and government all working together. And when you get everybody locked in and working together, you can get really good results. And so we want to profile those things and get those communities actively involved.
Well, I commend you on that. And that's the same effort that we try to do, is to provide information to people, mm-hmm. To let them know how to do their jobs better. And so I wish you nothing but the best with that, and look forward to collaborating with the ACT-IAC team to help bring those stories not just here, but all over the place.
And we appreciate your active participation, Francis. I think it's really helpful to be able to advertise what we're doing and allow folks to see the good work that's happening.
Let's go back to what you're doing at Altamira. We talked about the big data issue, and you mentioned structured versus unstructured data. Are we at a point now where big data is in danger of becoming a buzzword and people just think about it as this amorphous thing, or is the opposite happening, do you think? And that is that people are understanding the collection and the analytics and the decision-making process better than they have before.
You know, I think big data in some ways is following the same path as cloud from a few years ago. You know, cloud became the big buzzword.
Right.
And then it started to get some traction, and you started to see real success stories out of it. And then people realized that cloud is more than just a name. It's really a different way of thinking and a different way of operating. And I think you're going to see the same thing with big data. That, you know, it is a buzzword today, no doubt about it. Everybody, just like 3 or 4 years ago, everybody had their cloud offering, mm-hmm. and everybody had a cloud problem, and everybody's going to move to the cloud. Everybody's got the big data solutions and the big data answers right now. But I think you're going to find that big data, it has to be used to solve a real problem or a real challenge, or it's got to unlock some value that wasn't be able to be unlocked before. So you're going to see more practical stories of how big data can be used to advance the mission of different organizations. And it'll just get sewn into the way organizations operate, just like cloud is slowly getting sewn into the way organizations operate today.
Will it take as long, do you think, with data as it has with cloud? Because, I mean, we've been at the cloud mm-hmm. game for quite a while now.
Well, you know, I think one of the big slowdowns with cloud was the, you know, the security aspects. It's slowly being solved, although I was reading recently that you still only have about 2% of the federal IT, you know, budget being allocated towards cloud, which I think is slower than most people would have predicted 3 or 4 years ago. I don't think that you're going to have the slowness because of security around big data. I think you're still going to have some slowness around, you know, exactly how do you use it. And you really need to have... You know, with cloud, there was still mostly in the IT echelon. You know, the CIOs were driving it. The infrastructure was theirs. You know, the need to save money and get better performance was theirs. And they could kind of drive it with executive support. I think with big data, you're going to need to have executive buy-in from the non-IT community, from, you know, from agency leadership saying, I really want to be able to do something different with my data. Other than, you know, if you want to look at your IT infrastructure and how that's operating, sure, the CIO can do that themselves. Mm-hmm. But if you want to use data to make better mission decisions, You're going to need executive leadership of agencies to really buy into it. And that's a little different than cloud, I think.
Do you think that gets easier as the, for example, provisions in Fatara become more widespread throughout agencies, and the technology people and the non-technology people are collaborating more, or supposed to be collaborating more, about how an agency is led?
Yeah, I think that'll be easier. I think the more success stories you can see, the better. And, you know, you have a few, but you don't have enough collective success stories yet to really have folks that really take enough notice to it.
Just a couple of minutes left, Ted. It's great to talk to you, as always. Thanks for coming in. As we wrap up, what are the things that are on the landscape that people should be paying attention to in the data realm a year or two or 5 years from now that maybe we're not thinking about today or aren't as mature as they could be or whatever?
Well, when we talked briefly earlier about the new sources of data, and, you know, there's new sources of data almost every day. So I think, you know, how we look at that is going to be important. I think also, particularly for different communities, if you look at like the sensors where data comes in, if you look at the Internet of Things, where it's effectively going to be new sources of data, how do those things get built with data in mind? You know, if you're refreshing your sensor technology, if you're deploying something with a, you know, with a Internet of Things type approach, you know, do they get deployed with big data in mind? And you know, we're now architecting solutions around big data on legacy technology. Oftentimes, you're kind of laying it on top of what was put out there 5 years ago or even longer ago. Well, that wasn't architected and deployed with big data in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every time something gets deployed, whether it's a refresh or something, you know, new, an update of something that's been out there, or a brand new, you know, use like with Internet of Things, that's going to get architected with big data in mind. That's going to come with a whole new set of tools and a whole new set of approaches. And I think that's going to be an interesting mindset shift, is how we deal with that.
And built with security in mind, too, I would think.
Security is going to be a very interesting balancing act on this. Yep, security and privacy, quite frankly. Those are going to be debated, you know, pretty heavily.
Ted, great to see you as always. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Francis. Good to talk to you.